Hello, everybody, and thank you for coming out. As Jessica mentioned, I do tend to say that I was the sandwich generation on steroids, the single parent and the only child. Didn't start out that way. Let's just say the 90s were not kind to my family. In that decade, we lost quite a few members of my family. When I was 22, my brother died in a car accident. And then when I was 24, I guess, my dad died in a plane crash. The following year, I got married, and my father's brother, my uncle, walked me down the aisle. And then less than a year later, he had died of a heart attack in his 40s. And then there were various other family members. They were older, maybe more expected, but it got to the point where my cousins and I would look at each other and say, okay, who's going to be 1998? luckily, the trend slowed down, but it was definitely an incredibly challenging time period for my family, obviously for my mother and for me. In the middle of all that, I got married, and then my ex-husband was a cancer survivor, and we found out that cancer and chemotherapy make it difficult to have children. So I was very lucky before I turned 30 that I was able to have my oldest son. And shortly after my son was born, my mother was diagnosed with what's called idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. And for those of you that don't know what it is, it basically turns your lung tissue into scar tissue. We had been obviously very close. We had been through a lot of stuff together. I was living in Philadelphia at the time. She was still up in Boston. And she was told that her disease was dormant. And that she had a while before she had to think about next steps, but that she was too old for a transplant, and that there isn't any treatment for IPF. It's degenerative, and there's nothing really that you can do. So flash forward 5 years, and I found out that I was newly pregnant with twins, and my mother also at that same time found out that her disease was no longer dormant and that she needed to be thinking about end-of-life care. And so my husband and my mother and I talked about it and realized that there was no way in the world I was going to be able to run back and forth between Philadelphia and Boston with three small children in tow. And we built a house together that we all pitched in and, had an apartment for my mother. And so she moved in, and, I love my mother dearly, but living with her was an entirely different thing. I wouldn't have made this drastic a decision if it was an open-ended, decade-long proposition. So my mother moved to Philadelphia, and she found a new transplant surgeon, and then they said, you're not too old for a transplant. Or she found a new pulmonologist, and they said that she wasn't too old for a transplant. And my mother previously, we did all the stuff you're supposed to do. She'd had a million surgeries, and we had all these conversations about what was acceptable and what was not acceptable, and she didn't want tubes, and she didn't want this, and she didn't want to have excessive things that she considered excessive that wouldn't allow her to live a quality life. And then she moved down to Philadelphia, and I think what happened was she realized it was coming, and that she now had, newborn twin grandchildren and a six-year-old grandson that she wasn't going to get to see grow up. And so she changed her mind and got herself on a transplant list, and for 18 months, nothing really happened, and then she got worse and worse. And then in the middle of all that, my life imploded. My ex-husband announced after 13 years of marriage that he had come to the conclusion that he was gay. And there's not a lot of marriage counseling that's going to solve that problem. So in the midst of trying to figure out how to extract ourselves from this mess as decently as possible, my friend of mine said, come to Spain. You know, I'm going away on a business trip. Just come with me. Just get away for a few days. Let's figure this out, you know, and just have some time to sort of decompress. One and only time I left the country in 5 years, and of course I leave the country, and what happens? My mother gets the call for the transplant. So I go racing back, and my mother had the transplant and then was in the ICU for a week or so. And 2 weeks later, my husband moved out, and my mother had a very long, slow recovery, but she eventually did recover. And, you know, that transplant bought her another 6 years. And what it really bought her, what she said, was that she wanted the twins to remember her. And, you know, I think they were 8 when my mother died, and they remember her, and they wouldn't have remembered her when she was 2. When they were 2, if she hadn't made it. So I guess my point is, you think you know what you want, and you think you know what your family members want, and it's important to talk about that, but it's also important to keep talking about it, because what ultimately happened was that my mother had a good 5 years or so after the transplant, and then she started to get a lot worse. And then the Mother's Day before my mother died, we had a great Mother's Day, and then the Saturday after, she was in the hospital with pneumonia. And it started a long cycle of hospitalization, skilled nursing facility, home, rinse, and repeat, with every stage getting worse and worse and worse. And the nursing home didn't want to send her home. They wanted her to be in a long-term care facility. And my mother was adamant that she wanted to be at home. Luckily, she had the financial resources to be able to, I was able to concoct, you know, some crazy system of, I had a distant cousin who was a nurse, and then I had a cousin's friend who was a medical assistant, and she worked the day shift and he worked the night shift, and then they traded weekends, which in theory sounds great, except that they hated each other and they were constantly trying to get the other one fired. And I would get texts about, you know, how messy they left the place, or, you know, this one didn't do this or that one didn't do that. And it was stressful, and there were times when I just didn't know if I was going to be able to continue this. But in my mind, having my mother go into a nursing home, you know, that would have had its own other set of headaches, which, you know, I would have had to be the one to take my mother to all the appointments. And luckily, my cousin was able to do that, you know, because she was there the whole time. And she took on much more of a managing the day-to-day role, which, again, you know, I have a full-time job. I have 3 kids. I had a lot going on. So the only thing I want to end with is that toward the end, oxygen deprivation mimics dementia. And so there were times where I really felt like my mother really wasn't there. And then every once in a while, I would get this glimpse of her. And, you know, I tried to do right by her. I hope I did what she wanted. I hope that she was able. She did die eventually at home. She went into the hospital one last time a few weeks before she died, and then that's when they talked to me about hospice, which I'd been trying to get somebody to talk to me about for months, but it finally came up, and we did hospice at home. And then her birthday was a few days before she died. I grew up Catholic, and I found this card, and it had a priest being pulled over by a cop. And the priest said, the cop said, "Have you been drinking?" And then the priest says, "Only water." And then you open it up, and it says the cop says, "Well, you know, it smells like wine to me." And then the priest says, "Oh, you know, good Lord, he's done it again. He's made another miracle." And I read that to my mother, and she got it. She got the joke. And, you know, that was just astounding to me. And then, you know, a day later, she fell into a coma, and she never woke up. And that was that. But hopefully, you know, I tried my best to sort of help her do it her way. So thank you.